sampled them from them, but it's not the same bass line.
You can get in serious trouble for copyright infringement.
You got an Oreo going.
Yes? Copyright is not doing crap!
Copyright? What's copyright?
It's the right of the host to control.
Right now!
You know what time it is.
Welcome to
the copyright
experiment.
Welcome, welcome to the copyright experiment. Thursday at 11 o'clock. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Autonomy. Also got DJ Mochi with me.
What's up?
We are, we get this show started. Copyright experiment, if you've never heard before, is it's an experimental show. We play exclusively freely available music, which you're going to hear in a bit. And we also talk about copyright issues in the media, mostly related to music, but today not so much, because today is part two in our multi-part series on copyright compared in music against other creative endeavors. Last week we talked about software, and this week we're talking about
film,
the movie industry. So today is music versus film.
Kind of just music or film, and then you can draw your own comparisons to some degree.
Yeah. Film is probably the most well-known besides music industry where copyright plays a huge role in the formation of the industry anyway.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to talk about to preface it?
One of the things that, why don't you start, actually?
The thing that I noticed that really stands out to me, which makes sense, obviously, is that there's a lot of parts to film copyright. You know, music, it's kind of like, okay, there's the music, there's, like, you know, the production, and the composer's rights. But here, it's like, we have, like, I've lists which, you know, say all kinds of different numbers of like what parts can be copyrighted, and then in different countries it's different. But basically what I've seen is you have the artist, and then the literature and the music, and then the actual filming of it, and then sound recordings, and then the performance of it, and then also the sale of it, the packaging and all that. And those are all separate copyrights, which generally fall all within the producers or the financiers, but can sometimes also go to the actual producer, you know, and director, whoever is principally involved in it. But all these different parts, like, for example, in Canada, have to be sort of signed over to the company, whereas in the US there's kind of like legal things which make that a little easier. Which is pretty different from music, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah, a lot of, I would say, in film more than music, the distributor has a lot of power. Or controls a lot of the intellectual property of films, and choosing a distributor is like a really, really big deal for your film. And so if you don't know, in the film industry, there's the studio that makes the film. There are also companies that distribute films. And so they're the ones that make prints of it, that send them out to different theaters, license it out to the different theaters. And sometimes the distributor is the same company as the studio, and which is in the case of, for example, Warner Brothers or 20th Century Fox, but sometimes it's actually not the same. There are companies such as Mongrel or E1 Entertainment, that only do distribution.
Okay. And sort of one other thing that struck me as interesting about the copyright, which I already touched on a little bit, was how different it is in Canada and the U.S., mostly just with the fact that what I've read is that only the fixed copy is actually copyrighted, which is interesting to me. And then also you have to apply to register for some of the copyright sort of rights, which I've also read are, at least in Canada, are just, you know, given, basically,
right,
when you get it. But then in Canada,
typical sense of copyright.
It's funny because what they say in the Copyright Act is, the author gets the copyright.
Right.
Well, who's the author of a film?
Right.
I mean, there's so many people involved. It's
right.
Like, so it becomes a little bit ambiguous, and it tends to be, from what they said, mostly just, it ends up being common sense, kind of just coming from the cases that have happened in the past. And so, you know, they they make do with it, I guess.
Right. It seems like the author is most often just the company that produces it, the corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The corporation as a person.
And some interesting other notes that I found is that basically the titles are not usually copyrighted. They can be in certain cases when they're really unique, but on the other hand, they can be, and you know, they're very open for trademarking, which is interesting. Character names are usually not copyrighted also, except in cases like James Bond, where it's like a brand, you know?
Right.
Also ideas, kind of like in music, you can't copyright idea that's, you know, like battles in space. Like, that's too general to copyright. Right. It has to be something more specific. And so that's similar to music, I guess, in the sense that, you know, I can't go and copyright it. You know, the idea that I want to use 808 drums in a track on its own, like, that's, like, everyone does that, you know?
Yeah. Reading through some of the cases that have been brought against studios and stuff for copyright infringement in the States, or in film, they seem to be a lot more relaxed about copyright infringement in as far as what constitutes infringement in a film.
As compared to Canada?
As compared to music.
Oh, music. Right,
yeah. So we've talked about some cases where, you know, there's just a really small sample in a song and you can be sued for copyright infringement for that. There's precedent for that. But in film, there's you kind of have to prove your case a bit more. There's been cases where, you know, they say, like, oh, the story is very much the same, like the same kind of character, they're in the same kind of setting, they as a book, for example. So it almost seems like the story's been ripped off, but they say, those are all kind of you can argue that those are kind of just general stereotypes.
Yeah,
of,
or those both come from a common place or something.
Yeah, from a genre or something, and they're less of a direct ripoff. So they seem to side more with that in film.
And I guess that maybe also what I was saying earlier about how they tend to focus more on the actual fixation of it. So that specific rendition of it or whatever, you know, has more of a distinct copyright than the ideas surrounding it.
Right, yeah. That it's transforming into this new medium.
Yeah, because you know, the whatever the actors do, the directors do, all that stuff is going to be unique, and that's like, it's a huge chunk of it. So if you figure, you know, okay, I'm not saying that the story isn't a big part of it, but if you're saying that, you know, the story's similar, everything else is completely different, so therefore it should be copyright infringement, I can kind of understand why they would say that it's not really, a strong violation, I guess.
Right.
And one final thing that I found was interesting in my research was that there's a work for hire kind of situation in the U.S. There's actually a part of the copyright, which of their Copyright Act, which allows this. And it's basically like, if you work for a company and make something under that company, then the copyright goes to the company,
right,
instead of the individual. Whereas in Canada, there's no direct thing for that. And usually people just have to sign all kinds of agreements. So that means like extras, and like everyone has to say, okay, we're setting, you know, we're giving up our rights for what we're doing here to you guys. And I think that's an interesting thing that apparently they're actually reviewing that right now. They're in the process of trying to change some of those things and make it more modern, because honestly, it makes Canada less competitive. So that's what they're trying to focus on, getting us up to speed.
It kind of makes sense in the world of Hollywood style filmmaking, where you have a studio that's funding a really big investment, but it's kind of. We're moving, just like in music, in a form of greater independence of the filmmaker.
Yeah.
And that could seem as kind of a detriment to that kind of direction, where it really is like the individuals working on the film that are trying to retain creative control, because, you know, there's no studio that's funding it all.
Yeah, so I guess it just really depends on us, or, you know, Canada making laws that protect the individuals while also allowing for people to work for hire, you know, in the case that they want to, or that, you know, they are certainly working for a company.
Well, yeah, and in Canada, we also have to keep in mind that our film industry here is much, much different than the American film industry, and a lot of films that get made in Canada are made independently, or they're funded by an institution like the National Film Board, but they aren't. The National Film Board isn't a private company, right? They're funding films that they think should get made, not ones that are going to make the money. And so it kind of creates a very different climate for filmmaking in Canada than the U.S. which may be part of the reason why those things aren't codified in Canadian law.
Yeah, I guess that could, you know, make a lot of sense as to why the laws are different, and I'm sure going forward we'll see those differences in what they accept as, you know, laws.
Right. So I do also want to jump across to the U.S. and talk about their copyright landscape with film. And copyright basically comes into is basically become synonymous in the Hollywood world with piracy and online piracy. And the organization that's kind of pushed that the hardest is the MPAA, which is the Motion Picture Association of America. And they're the ones who you'll see always who put out the ads and try to convince you for a long time after downloading off the internet became pretty widespread in the early 2000s. They were the ones that were kind of pushing the idea that online piracy is synonymous with theft. And there, it's interesting to me that they've been so as successful at it as they have been, and it's not immediately intuitive to think of piracy as theft because in a lot of ways they're very different. But the MPAA, along with other organizations, have done an excellent job of convincing people that it is, especially lawmakers. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we had things like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that allowed for take down notices of copyright infringement online.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because to me, piracy is more like going to a museum and taking a really good quality picture of a painting or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, piracy, I mean, the word in its origins are just basically people who are a nuisance to all of society who don't offer anybody anything good except they're very extremely self-serving, right? Mm. And it's hard to imagine that the people who, you know, go to work and maybe just and contribute to society, but then also maybe might download a movie are thrown into the same, you know, wagon as actual like seafaring pirates.
Yeah, I wonder who first coined that term. It seems very like it has sort of an agenda behind it.
It certainly does, and it was actually coined in the early days of copyright, before copyright existed. Piracy existed, and it was basically, like I said, it was a way to characterize people who weren't giving anything to society, and that was back in the 1700s when book printing was first around.
So that was the first time it was used in like a copyright sense?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, it was actually very closely related to seafaring pirates at the time.
Huh. Mm. Didn't realize it went so far back.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the MPAA, they've been pushing really hard to create this idea that theft is synonymous with piracy, and they've came out with those ads, and you've probably seen them before movies where they say, like, you wouldn't steal a car, you wouldn't steal a handbag, you wouldn't steal a movie, and then piracy is theft.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many things wrong with that argument, but it seemed to convince a lot of people.
And I've talked to some people, and they said, you know, if I could download a car, like, I probably would.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, that doesn't even necessarily apply to everyone.
Yeah, the fact that you wouldn't steal a car means that you wouldn't, or it has really nothing to do with downloading a movie at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people have made that point that, you know, if you could download a car and the original car was still existed and was fully functional for its original owner, yeah, you probably would do that.
Yeah.
Which it just goes to show you how different the digital landscape has kind of made the way we process information and consume media. The MPAA, they have on their website, they actually, if you search MPAA on Google, the first hit is a form so you can report copyright infringement or like recording in theaters to the MPAA, which is kind of hilarious to me. They also have a program. They're very serious about this, if you couldn't
tell
yet.
Why is it hilarious to you?
Well, it's...
I mean, it makes sense to me, I guess.
That they're... It, it's hilarious to me because they're making it. They're just being really successful at their like propaganda campaign.
Okay.
Which, because it is propaganda.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's they're characterizing online piracy as something it isn't. I mean, it is losing them money, but only because they refuse to adapt to the new new platforms and the way that the music industry has changed.
Yeah.
And film is certainly moving in that direction, but it's taking a little longer than the music industry. They also have a reporting service where theater employees can report camcorder recording in a theater, and if they do so, they can get $500 bonus. These theater employees.
Oh boy!
So they're really incentivizing this reporting, which is also really strange to me. So
that's right.
That they'll pay people to turn people in.
I guess they're expecting they'll get more money from this, so they can. They can pay other people.
Yeah, and the thing that the MPAA doesn't really realize, though, I mean, maybe they do, but they don't appear to admit it, that a lot of the piracy that happens of their films aren't people recording the movie in the theater. It's people who are involved in the industry, who are involved in their studio, who decide, I'll just take this copy of the DVD while it's being produced and, you know, slip it to my friend who's going to put it online and pay me $500 for it.
Yeah.
So, it's a problem that's symptomatic of the industry. And also it's happening because, like I said, the industry refuses to allow people to consume the media in the form that they want to.
Yeah, I think that's a big point, is that it's not all the consumers. It's in part the people that are putting it out there who aren't adapting to what the consumers want.
Right, and we've seen that the music industry on the whole has actually grown since Napster was released, and that's because there's a lot more tools now to make money off of music. And the same thing is, it could happen very easily in the film industry, and it already kind of is happening. You can already download movies on iTunes, and the subscription model is taking off with Netflix. So, I mean, it's starting to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, and they do say that there's the Korean Film Council has published a report that said that online film piracy cost the industry $3.3 billion a year, which is, I don't know exactly how they got that number, but, I mean, that's $3.3 billion they could be making by publishing things online and allowing people to conveniently consume.
Yeah. And that, of course, I mean, I would imagine doesn't take into the fact that some people might not even bother paying for something if they didn't have access to it for free, or if they couldn't easily.
That's true. In my kind of experience, at least in the music industry, a lot of times convenience trumps, the freedom or illegality.
Mm.
And a lot of people are happy to pay $8 a month for Netflix rather than renting movies because it's more convenient.
Yeah, or streaming them online.
Yeah, so
I mean, that's the case for me. Like, I pay for Netflix because I don't want to spend the time looking for things online or something. You know?
Yeah, so a lot of people who would maybe be downloading movies are just watching them on Netflix because it's so much more convenient, and they're willing to pay a nominal fee for that convenience. So as long as you can make those tools convenient for people, then they're going to buy into it.
So how about just figuring out how to make things easy for people?
Yeah, see, that, I mean, that's how you leverage the market to work for you, right? And you don't need to do these, like, you don't have to go after the bad guys. You just have to make the bad guys irrelevant.
Yeah, make it so easy that the bad guys don't even matter.
Yeah.
Or that people, I guess, don't become bad guys, maybe, as the MPAA would put it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, and it's funny because even though the tides are shifting and changing, they're still, just last year, the MPAA was a really strong advocate of the SOPA and PIPA acts, which were bills proposed in the U.S. House of Commons and Senate, the Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act in the Senate. And these were both similar bills that were drafted to give power to rights holders to remove websites that were allowing these copyright infringing files to be disseminated to people and to make money off them through advertising and whatnot. So it would give power to these people to take them down immediately and tell search engines to stop pointing at them and tell advertisers to stop serving ads to the websites. And it's a very, very powerful bill that would have really helped the MPAA's cause and other proponents of the bill. But it would have kind of crippled the ability for these websites to have like a fair kind of assessment. It was basically someone complains about it and they have the power to shut it down right there without trial, without a report or anything, so or correspondence about it. So thankfully, in January of last year, you might have read news about it, but there was a lot of fight back on the internet from internet companies and users that the bill was too strong and too overpowering on the internet, and it didn't pass. So the internet is still a safe place. I don't think these things are going to go away until the industry, but someone comes in and shakes up the industry the way Netflix is starting to.
Yeah. One kind of thing on a different topic that I just thought of is that do you think that there are ways in which the copyright restrictions affect the creative process in film? Because like in music they definitely do, but I don't think you see it quite as much in film. You don't see as much like remixing that like is problematic or
right. You know? You see that mostly in online platforms such as YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's where, you know, that's where people are taking copyrighted material and remixing and transforming it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for those kind of platforms, you do see copyright getting in the way of creativity because people are making very creative things on YouTube by using copyrighted material, but, oftentimes they're getting taken down.
Okay.
So, you know, things like Supercuts, which just collect like, one instance of something in a movie and cuts them all together in a short reel. Those kind of things would be considered copyright infringement, but are really creative ways of communicating to people.
Yeah, they're transformative and
yeah.
What we would consider fair use, I guess.
Yeah, we would probably consider it fair use, but it's definitely vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think film copyright does have a detrimental effect in some instances to creativity.
Yeah,
and I think that's only for the types of work where people are basically responding and they're criticizing film and film industry and the way movies are.
Yeah, they're making fun of something.
It's a valid form of expression and mm-hmm. certainly entertaining and certainly intellectual, and I mean sometimes it's not, but still smart, right?
Yeah.
And that's certainly in danger if these like bills that I was just talking about went through.
It became too strong. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think that's about it.
Alrighty. Well, once again, you are tuned into the Copyright Experiment here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and we're going to take a quick little break and then we'll get back to play some music. Everything we play, you can hear on you can download actually on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com because mm-hmm. everything we play is freely available. And we'll just be right back.
Yeah. Before we go, I want to say something I've never said before. But if you want to call in with your thoughts on the film in copyright in film debate that we just had, you can call us in studio at 604-822-2487. That's UBCCITR if you have numbers or letters on your phone. So once again, 822-2487, call us, let us know what you think.
Or just say hi.
Cool. Or just say hi. We'll talk to you for a while.
We probably won't put you on the air if you just say hi, though.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Anyway, DJ Mochi is going to get his set ready. Take a quick break. Be back in a minute.
Bye.
Are you looking for career information relevant to your arts degree? Come check out Work Your BA, a career workshop series specifically designed for art students. Find out what you can do with your major, learn how to improve your resume, discover the secrets to networking, and much, much more. For more information, visit www.arts.ubc.ca/students/workyourba.
CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow at CITRDJ on Twitter.
Okay, and we're back. Back to the copyright experiment. We're just going to get right into the mix. You ready, DJ Mochi?
Oh, yeah.
He's ready. Let's kick back and listen to some tunes. What's up first, anyway? Ah, yes, the Brian McKnight remix by Roman Kitten.
Running away. twerk, 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 twerk. Bring it back.
Crazy harps on this one. Track by Pomo called So Fire. Before that, the twerk song by Matt the Alien. Local dude. Crazy turntables. Go see me if you have a chance. It's called Alien Twerk Shop. By Giraffage of The Dream. He did a whole remix album of this album by The Dream called Giraffage Remixes The Dream. Go check it out. Whoa. Pace's bootleg of Childish Gambino. Gonna take a quick break here. Get back to some more tunes in a minute. Stay tuned. Hold tight.
Studying abroad looks great on your resume and opens doors for exciting career paths. Don't miss the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Wednesday, February 26th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Convention Center, East Ballroom. Admission is free. Come early at 2 p.m. to listen to our guest seminar on how to access over $100 million worth of scholarships for your studies. Check the website on studyandgoabroad.com.
The question, what kind of cities do we want to live in? How do we want our cities to be? Cannot be divorced from the question of what kind of people we want to be.
Join me, your host, Andrew Longhurst, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for The City, an hour dedicated to critical discussions of urban issues. Live on CITR 101.9 FM and CITR.ca. For more info, visit thecityfm.org.
Whoa, welcome back. Gonna play some more tunes. First up, a Rihanna remix of Stay by Branches. Well, let's get into it. P.S. Did you guys know that Fun Drive is coming up soon? Fun Drive is the annual fundraiser for CITR. February 27th. We'll keep talking about it, but just so you know, we're going to be asking money from you later. Got to the left. the remake by Cut Corners and Marble from The Freshest in Vancouver. It's a remix of Buggin' by Ginuwine and Aaliyah. Bit of dubstep for you by Vancouver's own Alonious. Remix of Dark Art Hanging on the Wall. We'll be right back.
just fine because I got a job.
Money, 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 causing clothes.
That's what I want, nigga.
Man, I need those.
I need to go shopping every day of the month.
Money, 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 cause it close.
I need a new weed, motherfucker, don't front.
Money, man, I need those.
Niggas make me sick, so I'm only having fun.
Like,
I see
you looking at me.
Shit, my, don't trip, my, but if you do, better fall on this dick. My feelings run deep, girl, instead of your throat.
Yes, sir.
This so that I know. Money and hoes, I'm still crashing these cars, though. One versus your car, no. Bad bitches and more smoke. Y'all widows is all broke. Bring me bands, I got a rainstorm coming. Bring your bitch and that's a brainstorm coming. She want pipe, I get your main girl plummet. I ain't never cared too much. I ain't never gave two fucks. But I tell your ass two things. About money, about hoes, I'm a true king. And if I don't smoke weed, I catch moose wings. Damn, champagne all on the flow. Bring me more. Got 100 bad bitches at the door. Bring me four. I need more weed in this bitch right now. Pop the pill, a power trip right now. Got this water, I'ma sip right now. Got your daughter on dick right now.
Money, money, causing clothes.
That's what I want, nigga. That's what I want.
Money, man, I need those.
I need to go shopping every day of the month.
Money,
Brenmar original right here.
Money, causing
like a hoe. Coming on his new mixtape. Dropping soon.
Man, I need those.
Niggas make me sick, so I'm only happy.
Super dope track.
Your dreams never found it. Talking about the launch and pad, the place to blow that off beat path. You were scared to go, motherfucker. Now you mad cause we walking, doing more than talking. Losing not an option. Every hater that I had, I leave them snoozing in a coffin. That's 6 feet deep, add two just for coasting. Cause they always acting like zombies. Man, they always up on me. They trying to grab at the brains. I swear that I'm having same, but with a nice flow, tight rope. No hope for the fucking lavish and lames. I say, this for the ones who keep it dirty. In a 12 o'clock world, man, I'm so 130. My outfit clean, but my spit game dirty. Put me up against another, he ain't even hitting 30. I said, it's something that I make sure of. It's a beautiful accident, but you still gon' need insurance. Don't believe it? Well, believe that I can give you assurance. You don't buy it? Well, believe that I can give you the purchase. But no return of the service, barely scratching the surface. Put me out in the rain, homie, I'm still gonna flourish. I'm still bringing that heat, boy, and the worst of the flurries. All in all, dog, just believe that you should be worried. I say,
yeah.
some more local dubstep, a little more relaxed. It's by Elnix, Follow the Sun. And before that was a track by a guy from Winnipeg, I believe, Charlie Stumble, called Fire. Crazy bass on it. This is also going to be our last track of the night. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out the blog for download links for all those tracks. copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast there too. If you're going to keep listening, Pierre should be in with Oral Tentacles, probably through midnight to 6 a.m. Until next week. See you later.